So calls for the end of the media as we know it are not new to anyone in this business. Clairvoyants have been peering into their crystal balls for years to find ever-shrinking staffs at newspapers and radio and TV stations across the country, predicting the end is near. But it's possible that the combination of the significant shifts in technology plus the economic downturn altogether may constitute a critical mass for changes in the upcoming year in the media. We've seen bankruptcies of significant media companies like the Tribune, as well as a transformative technology rushing to market, changing the business model. Siva Vaidyanathan, who's an associate professor of media studies at the University of Virginia, joins us for more on the issue. Thanks for joining us, Siva.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
Is it possible that this is the critical mass of changes, if not in the media, because there's more media than ever before, but certainly in the business model for traditional media?
Yeah, there's undeniably a shift in the sort of the foundations of business. And that was going on pre-recession. One of the things we've seen over the last few years is that advertisers are making very rational decisions that the Sunday newspaper circular is not as good a payoff as buying some Google AdWords, right? So those sorts of shifts have been steadily worrying people in the media industries. But that doesn't mean, as you said, that doesn't mean we're going without, you know, intelligent commentary or insightful and polyphonic voices about what's going on in the world. We have more information and more media than ever before. The real question is, can we continue to support the really heavy, expensive, high-quality work, right? Like a Frontline documentary or a Cy Hirsch doing a huge, 10,000-word piece in The New Yorker. Are those sorts of really essential elements of our public sphere not long for this world, because those things come out of a surplus that we've generated by our consumerism. We tend to forget this, like the fact that we spend so much on beer and cars then helps companies like General Motors and Miller and Budweiser support things like foundations and things like public television and public radio shows as underwriters, right? So there are lots of different ways that the strong economy we have enjoyed for 50 years has generated this really brilliant surplus, which has made us all sort of smarter and wiser. So
they also support traditional for-profit media in terms of advertising. And I guess the question is, how much of that goes away? And does the expensive media that you talk about here, is that exclusively the authoritative, high-quality media? Or is there a certain amount of surplus and excess spending in the media, kind of like, the salary cap in baseball or football or something, that can actually reduce the cost of high-quality media?
Yeah, there may be. And, I think people have been experimenting with that for a good decade now. The best example is Talking Points Memo, right, which is doing really high quality investigative work and broad assessments of the American political scene with relatively low overhead, although I'm sure Josh Marshall's overhead seems to increase every day as he hires more people, right? But he's still doing it a lot cheaper than USA Today is doing it, but he's doing a different job, right? So you can find these niches, especially in politics, which really isn't hard to cover, these niches really growing under these new models. But we really have to worry about whether we are going to lose the really smart, foundational, big pieces that take months to work on or years to write a book. Remember, American publishing is also in a crisis, not just because they've been bought up by multinational corporations going for the bottom line and wishing everybody could be a Stephen King, right? All those stupid decisions made by the accountants and the lawyers at the highest levels of publishing have trickled down to hurt authors and editors who actually want to do good work, right? That's happened. But we also are seeing impending shrinking of library budgets at every level. And that's going to decimate publishing in ways that we haven't even begun to examine.
So do you think in part it's about the vehicle as opposed to what the organization, the content that they're generating? In other words, you talk about foundations that perhaps these media outlets should really set themselves up under that model and still be able to deliver some of those big, longer term, more in-depth projects that you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. We have to recognize that not-for-profits and foundations are really an important part of our media environment. You have big important magazines like Harper's and The Nation that are foundation-driven, and you have public radio at every level, definitely foundation-driven, and public television foundation-driven. Now, all of these foundations are seeing their endowment shrink along with everybody else's retirement accounts. So
yeah, they're all
it's
in
not
crisis.
Like there's a lot of money there.
I mean, yeah, NPR announced layoffs in the last month. I mean, it's crazy.
Exactly. So it's not like any aspect of the economy is going to be untouched. And we have to really start asking ourselves, as a democratic republic, are we now seeing the sort of ebbing of pretty enlightened age? And are we going to find ourselves struggling to find that really high quality work in the future? And what can we do to stem it? And for all those reasons, I think it's important that the incoming administration take a significant long-term view toward cultural and information policy in ways that, and see what little and hopefully inexpensive ways the state, the government can help deaden the impact of this recession slash depression.
You're talking about writer's project, like in the depression?
You know, I don't think that that's a particularly wise idea right now. Mark Prinsky, a writer for the New Republic Online, put out an article in December in which he advocated a new federal writers project with some tweaks to sort of update it. I don't think that's the right approach. I don't think we need a brand new program to help, you know, a bunch of Harvard grads who happen to be making less money than they did before. I don't think that's the prime way to support this, what's going to be an increasingly failed market. I think what we need is to bolster the sorts of institutions we have that are operating rather well. For all of the controversy, the fact is the NEH, National Endowment for the Humanities, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and most importantly, libraries at every level, public, community college, university and college libraries, those libraries are one of the biggest markets for so much of this material. We really have to defend those budgets first and foremost, and I think actually invest more heavily in Corporation for Public Broadcasting specifically.
Yeah, we're going to hate that idea. That's right.
I know,
we're
right?
We're definitely going to hate that. Well, Steve, we got to go, but it sounds like a stimulus package for the entire broad media industry is the
but
sort
I,
of...
I wouldn't call it that. I wouldn't call it a stimulus package. I would call it a bit of a life raft, right? I think it's much more important that we not think of this as stimulating the economy, which is a totally different concept and a very important concept and one that ultimately will help fix the rest of our problems in society. That's the idea of stimulus. What's really happening here is the recognition that over the next 5 years, we could be losing some really important institutions in this country that we're going to be very sorry about when we see them go.
Well, we may lose them in January.
We have to take a strong position on it.
Well, he hands out his life rafts from Charlottesville, Virginia. Siva Natvadyanathan is an associate professor of media studies at the University of Virginia.
Only a few more days for retailers to make up for dismal sales this year, but consumers just simply aren't buying. We want to hear from you. What would it take to get you into a store? Why have you stopped spending? And what would it take to get you to spend some? Give us your story, 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytakeatthetakeaway.org.
Ran out of paper towels. He had to replace them. So we
went and bought some.
Yeah,
here we go. Here's a thought for your takeaway today.
There's an economic gangster inside of all of us, and if the conditions are right and the institutions are weak, that economic gangster could come out.
That's Edward Miguel, professor of economics at UC Berkeley, author of Economic Gangsters, Corruption and Violence and the Poverty of Nations. We're always on, and if you missed anything, take our podcast to go. Subscribe now at thetakeaway.org or on iTunes. I'm Adora Udoji.
And I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.